Hey, you're listening to Our Lively Tribe podcast. If you are listening on iTunes, please rate us. I think you can rate us on Podomatic too. So please rate us. The more rates and subscribers we get, the better people can find our podcast. So thanks for listening. Instagram.
What?
Hey, I'm Erin.
And I'm Travis. And welcome to another episode of Our Lively Tribe podcast.
I've been sitting here staring at you for a few seconds waiting. And it didn't happen, so I just pressed record anyway.
All right. Okay. So, tonight I thought we could kind of get into Jacob. And I'm going to interview you, so you don't need to say anything.
This is going to be a long night.
I know. Well, we don't have to cover all of him. But, so Jake is our third child. Our middle child. And So, at what point did you realize that Jake had something different about him? Yeah, we're going all the way back there.
Yeah, this is going to be a rough one. So it was my 20-week appointment, and it's when you go do that ultrasound to do gender and all of that sort of thing. And so I was married to Steven at the time. Mm-hmm. And we didn't find out what we were having with Bryce. We didn't know if he was a boy or a girl, so we had decided to do the same thing with Jake.
Oh, you had?
Yeah.
Oh.
We weren't going to find out what he was. And we went into the ultrasound, and the technician was a young kid, and he took a while and kept staying on his back, like looking at his back. I could tell it was the baby's spine. And then he got up and walked out, and then a doctor came in. And the doctor looked closely, and it was very quiet and very serious. And I remember looking at Steven, and we were just silent. And then he said, "I can't really tell you what I see, but it's of concern, and we need you to go to a specialist." And we were like, "Wait a second, like, you can't leave, like, what the hell's going on?"
Yeah.
And he just said, "You know, it looks like there might be a tumor on the spine. We're not sure. This is why you need to go to a specialist." And so I was 20 weeks pregnant. I remember I sat in my car and cried my eyes out afterwards. Because you think, like, okay, what did I do?
Oh, really? You blamed yourself.
Oh, yeah. What did I do in this pregnancy that made, you know, that could have hurt him or... You know, and then my, going way back, a few weeks before that appointment, my brother and his wife had just, lost their almost 10-month-old in an accident. So we were all very raw and very emotional. And so we went to a specialist. And the specialist told me that it looked like a tumor and that these typically work the baby's heart too much and the outcome is not too good and that I could terminate the pregnancy.
And how was your reaction at that?
Steven and I walked out of there and he looked at me and was kind of like, "What are you thinking?" And I said, there's no way. Like, I'm not terminating the pregnancy. And he felt the same. And so that was when we went to Loma Linda, in Loma Linda. And I had an amazing, amazing doctor there. Oh, I wish I could remember her name. She was probably one of the best doctors I've ever had. Very attentive and very caring and followed Jake very closely. Every week I had an ultrasound. And, they had thought it was a sacrococcygeal teratoma, which was a tumor on the spine, and it could grow to the size of a cantaloupe, so it could be bigger than the baby. and it would take all of his blood supply, so it would overwork the baby's heart, and then the baby would go into heart failure.
Oh, man.
So the goal was to carry to 30 weeks, and then they would deliver him. And then I got to 31 weeks, and I got to 32 weeks, and the
mass... And at this time, they still didn't really know what it was.
Right. They were still considering it to be this SCT, and then they... It started to change as he got bigger, and it got smaller and smaller, and didn't really look like it was taking his blood supply. And then all of a sudden, it was internal and not external on the baby. And this doctor went home to her husband, who was a doctor, and the doctor said, "It looks like a vascular malformation." And so they went with that. And then they said, "Okay, we want you to carry as far as you can. And if we notice the baby is in distress at all, we'll take him. But if not, then we'll schedule a C-section for May 27th.
And you made it all the way to May 27th because that's his birthday.
Yeah. And I got to pick the date, I mean, which is weird. And he had to be a C-section because they weren't sure what was going to happen with him. They didn't want to put any stress on his heart for labor. So 27's my birthday, and 27's kind of always been a good number for me. So we picked May 27th.
Mm-hmm.
And I carried all the way to May 27th and had a C-section, and there were 10 specialists in the room next door. So they took him out, and he cried, and then they passed him through a small hole in the wall into the room next to us. And that was, like, the first video of him. And then I went to recovery, and then I remember they brought him in to me to try to get him to nurse. And then they took him to NICU right away because they weren't really sure what he was going to look like or be like or... they weren't sure how his lungs were going to be developed, and it was all kind of unknown. It was kind of a mystery.
So how many days or months into it was it that he was diagnosed?
He was almost one when he was actually diagnosed with KT syndrome.
What were they saying before that? Just
a vascular malformation, a lymphatic malformation.
And what did it look like at first glance?
So, like, the left side of him looked normal, and then his right butt cheek and his right leg were wrinkly and large, and he has port wine stains or birthmarks all over his bottom and down his leg.
And at that time, those were noticeable, too.
Oh, yeah. They were just as dark as they are now. If not darker. And you can't see those in ultrasounds, so they had no idea he'd have all those birthmarks. And his bottom was just really enlarged, and it just looked so bizarre. So he was in NICU, and I got to see him the next day. So it was almost 24 hours before I got to see him.
Wow.
And he,
Did you, during those 24 hours, did you know he was okay?
I don't remember much. I know that Steven was with him most of the time. He'd come see me, and then he'd go just hold him, and he got to do, like hold him on his chest, and he did a lot of skin-to-skin for those first 24 hours, because I couldn't. I was still recovering, and they just didn't take me down there. And the next day I remember asking if I could go see him, you know, cause after you have a baby, like you typically have the baby in the room with you and you're practicing nursing and all of that. And I didn't have that. So I felt just like really lost. And then they finally brought a wheelchair up and took me down to the NICU. And, I remember standing up and they showed me his leg and his bottom and all of that. And then I just sat and held him. I remember trying to nurse, but they were already, like, tube feeding him which I don't know why. Like, he wasn't having problems swallowing. And then a few days later, I was discharged. And he had to stay because they just wanted to run all sorts of tests before they sent him home. So he was there for 11 days.
Oh, wow.
And the Ronald McDonald House at Loma Linda, it was really small, and so they couldn't keep us there. So they put us up in a hotel for like $10 a night just down the street. So I would stay and ride the shuttle over to the hotel and then, I mean, to the hospital. And then Stephen, we had Bryce still. And so he was at home with Bryce and then Wood. I think he was working off and on as well. So leaving the hospital was hard. I remember leaving the hospital and just like crying because you go in with a baby and then you go out without him.
Yeah.
So that's hard. But by day 11, they were kind of like, all of the issues we thought he was going to have, he doesn't have, and he seems great, and why don't you take him home and then follow up with appointments? And they wanted us to see a hematologist, which is a blood disorder doctor, and a dermatologist, which is a skin disorder. So we stayed at Loma Linda for the first year and saw their specialist.
How was that first year?
Horrible.
Why?
Because we, I don't know, I don't remember a lot of it. I blogged all of it.
Oh, yeah.
I've never gone back and read them, but I blogged the whole thing because it was the best way to keep all of our family informed on his health. And it was also another way for me to, like, get on paper on the computer everything that was just discussed. So I would, you know, we'd be admitted in the hospital and the doctors would come talk to me and then I would blog it all so that I could remember it all.
Well, what were you being admitted for? I mean, what was going on with Jake?
So he would just be screaming uncontrollably. And so we would wonder if he was in pain or he would have a fever. And, you know, so that meant there was an infection somewhere. He had cellulitis a lot, which is an infection. And so we were in and out of the hospital probably, I don't know, 8 times in his first year of life. And before he turned 1, I had taken him to his pediatrician because I'm like, he's just screaming and screaming and he has a fever and I don't know what to do. And she kind of said that she'd studied it a lot and looked up that it could, KT syndrome or these vascular malformations could get into the brain and in the head and stuff. So she was really worried about that and she sent us right down to Rady Children. She's like, I want you to start seeing doctors at Rady. She said, I think you'll have more opportunity there and more doctors that could help. So we went down to Rady and he was admitted there. And that was before his first birthday. And then they officially diagnosed him with Klippel-Trenaunay syndrome, which is a vascular and lymphatic malformation. So right before his first birthday, we kind of had some direction. And some relief and like, okay, like we now have a diagnosis. Like now let's go from there.
But in the end, that kind of gave you nothing still because it was so rare.
It was, but I felt like we were down at Rady and they knew what they were talking about. Whereas at Loma Linda, they hadn't yet diagnosed him.
Yeah.
So we were still kind of lost on what it was.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it's hard because, like, I don't remember a lot of him being one, or like, or a baby. I just remember it being a lot of stress. And is he crying because he's in pain, or is he crying because he's a baby? And
yeah.
And my focus was all on him all the time, always on edge, always worried. So, and then it was a lot of, you know, he was on infant aspirin to thin his blood so he didn't get clots, and so you had to like crush that up and put it in his bottle. And but then you're like, I have my brand new baby on aspirin, like that was scary. And then constantly on Tylenol for fevers and pain because he was getting cellulitis, and that's really painful. But at the same time, he's an infant, so he can't tell you if he's in pain. So he's just screaming all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but then he'd go for weeks where he was great. And it felt like we were living a normal life. And then all of a sudden it would come up again. And you're reminded that, oh yeah, you have a kid that's really sick.
So how did he... And then right after his first birthday... What happened?
Stephen died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy when you stop and think of, like, how rough Jake's had it from day one. You know? And now we're dealing with him as a six-year-old, and it's like... it still shows up.
Yeah.
So how'd year two go, then? Was it still hospital visits? Was it...
It was weird. So Stephen died in June. And then all of a sudden, Jake was, like, okay for a long time. He didn't have any issues until November.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from June to November without a hospital trip, which was, like, so unheard of. Like, we'd never gone that
long.
What
was the change in that?
No idea. We just contributed it to, like, pure luck or, like, God giving me a break. Yeah. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, could you have imagined of having to, like, go into the hospital right after that time or something?
Yeah, the first time we went back to the hospital was because Bryce broke his arm.
Hmm.
And that was, like, October. And Bryce broke his arm and we stayed overnight at Loma Linda. Because he needed x-rays and stuff. And then he got a cast. And then in November, Jake had cellulitis. And so we were back down at Rady, I think, for like 4 days. And our stays were never more than like three or four days.
Where was Bryce during that time?
My mom would take off work and he'd stay with my mom. Or Sandy would take off work and he'd stay with Sandy.
Hmm.
I think Kiki was around, so he would... probably stay with Kiki. I had a lot of help.
Yeah.
I know Sandy stayed with me at the hospital a little bit, and they'd bring Bryce down, that sort of thing. But it was always, you're in there, and the doctors don't know what's wrong, and you don't know what's wrong, and it's always kind of unknown. That was the trip that a resident came in and was like, he's really sick and we don't know if he'll make it. And I was just like, are you joking right now? Like, who are you? And then a doctor came in and was like, no, he's okay. But, you know, I just lost Steven and, you know, my brother had lost Caden just a couple years earlier. And so I was just like, oh my God, like, when is it going to happen again? It was kind of, unfortunately, just waiting for the next ball to drop. And so it was just, I don't know how I survived. But, and then the visits got, like, less frequent and less frequent as he got older. But they were still, like, every 3 months or so he was admitted for something. And then I think by that following year, you and I were together.
Mm-hmm.
And he was admitted a couple times.
Yeah. Definitely.
Remember. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time he was admitted?
I kind of. Remember he was so little, he still had, like, gates up on his bed, I remember.
Yeah. Remember that time he was in the bath? And, so he has these port wine stains on his legs, and they have, like, little tags on them, and if the tag falls off, it's like a scab almost, then it just like pours out blood.
Yeah.
And he has not done that in such a long time, knock on wood.
Man, I know.
But I remember I had gotten him out of the bath, and he was running around his room, like, shaking his butt naked. And
that's right.
Touching his bottom. And all of a sudden, I turn around, and, like, the pressure behind the port wine stain would just, like, it wouldn't just, like, drip blood. Like, it would, like, shoot it out. Yeah. And he had, like, run around his room and sprayed, like, the walls and the carpet and the bed. Yeah. And he had rubbed it all over himself. And it looked like
a
murder scene in his bedroom.
That's true. That's
I think
funny.
Melanie was over. And I'm like, I need help. And he doesn't know, like, it's happening. He doesn't
until he sees the blood, and then he, like, freaks out.
Yeah.
But, yeah. No, he was little, and I don't remember the first one so much, but I really remember when we were in there for, like, 2 weeks. That was a lot. That was when he was older, though.
He was 3.5.
Yeah, that was a pretty draining time, for sure. I think maybe the first ones, I don't know if I felt as responsible. Like, I don't think I had Bryce. I think Bryce maybe still, like, went to your mom's.
Probably.
I feel like. But I would come down and be with you guys.
I remember you came down and you let me go across the street to shower.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would never leave. Like, I just, yeah. I mean, he's little and he's in a big room by himself. So I couldn't leave. I didn't want to, even though the nurses would have let me, like, I couldn't leave unless someone else was there.
And he's also, he is not the type to warm to anyone.
No, he's not receptive to other people, to the nurses. I mean, because the nurses would poke him and
yeah, he doesn't like anyone in hospitals.
I remember one stay, he had 18 pokes and attempted blood draws in 3 days. Yeah. And it was horrible. It was horrible. They had to call the medevac team that fly in the helicopters to come down and do it because they were so good at doing it quickly, and everyone had already tried and couldn't get a draw. Ugh, it's terrible.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, when we would get admitted, it always starts out terrible, and Jake is so sick, and after a few days, it's always, like, a relief to start seeing the light come back in his eyes and start having him be, like, fun. And Jake is such, like, a stay-at-home, I want to be on the couch and watch TV. And at that time, he was so in love with Mickey Mouse that when he would start loving that again, he, like, loved being in the hospital because he got to watch the iPad all day or TV all day.
And eat French fries because we would give him, as long as he was eating, we didn't care what he ate. Just eat French fries all day. I don't care. Just get better.
So by, like, the third and fourth day, it was, like, he was enjoying.
And he was getting balloons and people were bringing gifts. And the hospital, you know, showers them with gifts. And
So when it's time to go, it's like, oh, this is nice. And it was such, like, a bonding time for you and him.
Oh, yeah. I lay in bed with him now, and I snuggle up to his face, and he's got such a squishy, lovey face. And it's just, I slept in bed with him every single night at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the couch for the parents, but his bed was more comfortable, and there wasn't a night I didn't, there was one night I did not stay with him, and that was because I went back to the Ronald McDonald House with Bryce, and you stayed with
Jake. I don't even remember.
Yeah. I had one night alone with Bryce because I just missed him. It was during that 2 week stay.
Yeah. It's funny, as bad as they were, I think that's also, like, a real bonding time for us. You know, the last time, I mean, I was so responsible for Bryce. Like, there was no longer calling grandparents or help. It was just us.
When we were living in Temecula then, mm-hmm. and Bryce was in kindergarten, so he still needed to go to school.
Yeah.
And you were working. You couldn't take time off work.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but that was a good, like, just felt like family. Like, because were we even married at that point? I don't know.
No, I think we had just gotten married.
The July before.
So we'd only been married for maybe 4 months. Yeah. Well, yeah, because that 2 week stay I was just pregnant with Trenton. Yeah. And we hadn't announced anything yet.
Yeah. So where do we stand with Jake and KT now?
So after that 2 week stay, we had just gone to the Vascular Birthmark Foundation conference in Irvine. Mm-hmm. That same month. I think just weeks before he was admitted. And I said, I learned all of this stuff, and there's this great doctor in San Francisco, and I want you to call her. And if you don't, then I'm going to take him up there for treatment, because she seems to know more about this. So you learn to advocate for your kid. Like, you learn to put your foot down and say, no, I don't want students coming in here looking at his butt. Like, I don't want this. He's not ready for that. Like, this is how things are going to go, because this is my kid, and you can really... You have a lot more say in the hospital when it comes to your child than you think. And I asked a lot of questions, and I knew more than most residents. And doctors would tell the residents that. Like, you can go talk to the mom, and she'll explain it all to you. And so I'd really put my foot down that trip. And I said, I can't have my kid in and out of the hospital every 3 to 4 months. Like, this is not good for him, because... You know, you guys don't seem to know what's wrong every time we come in. And it's always something, you know, it's always the same thing, but we start from the beginning every time. And I was just done. And so I said, they had heard of this medication, and I had heard of it. And I remember sitting down in a conference meeting with 4 doctors, and they were all on the same page, and they decided to start him on it. And
I was at that meeting.
Yeah. And it was called... Sirolimus, and it's for kidney transplant patients, if I'm correct. But they had seen it work for these lymphatic malformations, and the goal was to stop the growth of it, because it was growing bigger, wider. His leg was just getting huge, and he was getting, you know, cellulitis and infections in his leg and in the cysts that are in his abdomen. So the goal was to stop that, and it was a trial, and they started him on it. They sent him home on Halloween with a home IV. Mm-hmm. I remember I pushed him around the neighborhood in a stroller dressed as Peter Pan and a home IV.
Yeah, that was rough.
And he's been on that medication ever since, and he's been admitted once in the last 3.5 years. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
No, 3 years. It's been 3 years that he's been on it. And his leg is... insanely different. It's better. It's so much better. It's still big and still different looking, and but it definitely has stopped growing bigger as he grew bigger.
Seems like it, but
yeah.
How rare is KT syndrome?
I think it's like 1 in every 100,000.
Yeah, pretty rare.
Very rare. I think there are 11 kids down at Rady that are on the same medication as him. And I don't necessarily know if it's for the same reason. But I know his response to the medication has been the very best.
Yeah.
There's a lot of side effects with it. And the only side effects he's ever had are the mouth sores, which he gets occasionally.
Which seemed to be like a canker sore.
Yeah. Inside his mouth, and I don't ever even know when he gets it.
No, he just complains.
Unless I put like pineapple in his lunch, and he's like, I can't eat that.
It's acidy stuff when, yeah.
So he's doing well. We always have to watch for fevers, and we have to watch that he doesn't take a big fall. Recently he had had a couple lumps that I found on his leg, and we took him down right away, and they get us in for an emergency ultrasound, and they had found blood had pooled like in his cyst, and that he, as long as an infection didn't settle, he would be okay. So we stayed on top of that. It's a chronic illness, so he'll have it his entire life, because there is no cure right now, and we treat it symptomatically. So what do you think about it all? What did you first think when you joined this family and I'm like, hey, my kid is a big old booty?
Yeah, so when I came in around Jake was 1.5, and he was just so attached to you and to your mom. And there was, like, no room for anyone else in his little life.
Well, everyone he had ever met poked him with an IV or wanted to check him out. And
he wasn't yet at the age where, like, Bryce was 3.5, and Bryce was, like, yay, there's someone to play with. There's, you know, he was excited that I was around.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't look at me as anything other than, like, someone to play with.
And excited that you were interested in him.
Yeah. So, but Jake was the complete opposite. He didn't want to have anything to do with me.
Yeah.
And it took him a long time to warm up. And Jake was also just difficult. I mean, he was 2.5. Or 2. Yeah, so...
No, he was 1.5. He was over 1.5, but...
So just like getting into, like, 2s. So terrible 2s, you know, was pretty gnarly with him. And I also didn't know where I could stand when it came to the boys, really, at that time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's weird now having a 2-year-old. And seeing how differently I am with Trenton than I was with Jake, you know, it's a bummer now. I wish I could have been more like the dad I am to Trenton, to Jake when he was little.
I don't think he would have let you, though.
No, and he wouldn't have.
And I don't know if he would have let Steven, had Steven still been here. Like, he was very much so mine.
Yeah.
You know, and Bryce was very much so... Stevens.
And that just came true with Bryce, too. I mean, he was right. Way more receptive to me. So, even today, Jake still...
would choose mom over.
Oh, Jake would choose... Well, he may choose Yaya over anyone. That's at true. This point, because Yaya doesn't yell at him ever.
Yaya's my mom.
Yeah, his grandma. So, but... But at the time, man, I don't even... It was just another... I don't know. I don't remember ever being scared off from it.
Like any, well, you're still here, like any so... sane human would have been. Well, I think you'd never had a kid before, so looking at Jake, you know, like, in the bathtub or any of that, like, just so quickly became normal.
Oh, like as far even, as his leg?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's like I never even really noticed it. It was just Jake.
Yeah, it was just a part of Jake.
And it still is, just, like, it's weird how you just get so accustomed to those things.
Yeah. Because if I show it, you know, somebody a picture of Jake and his, like, bottom and his leg now, they have no idea all of that is there. And they look at it and are, like, shocked.
Mouth dropped. Like,
because it looks so different.
It's so funny, yeah, and you just don't even see
it. To us, it's just there.
Don't see it at all. Even when he's standing next to Bryce and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's funny. But but he did eventually warm up and started calling me. He started calling me me.
M-E.
That was the name he gave me. So that was... We loved that. And that didn't last very long.
No.
But that was fun.
And then he called you Travis with a B. Travis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did they call you dad?
Bryce randomly would do it when I started coaching his first soccer team when he was 4. You know, and I don't know, I think he really always wanted to. I think he missed having a dad, for sure.
And then I remember talking to you and thinking, like, it was a security thing. Like, yeah. Letting everybody that was there know, like, this is who I belong to.
Yeah.
So by calling you dad, and we never encouraged it. We never.
We didn't even bring, like, when he did do it, I just responded as if.
Yeah. And then I remember you coming back to the house and being like, oh my gosh, he totally just called me dad. And I was just like,
it was still like, those are still sensitive moments, you know, in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
But
they didn't fully call you dad until I was pregnant with Trenton. When they actually really started calling you dad.
Which is, yeah. Now it's...
That's another podcast.
Now. What?
All of that. You coming around and being in their lives.
Mm. But as of today, Jake's been healthy for a while. Yeah, luckily. And we're dealing with different things with him that are more like emotionally based. And we're learning how to navigate that and trying to decipher how much of it is Jake's personality, how much of it could be caused from the pain that Jake's in.
We did learn that he is probably always in pain.
And has been since the day he was born.
So to differentiate, like, the pain on a scale of 1 to 10, or like, he may not even know what it's like to not be in pain, which is really hard as a parent to accept. Like, your kid shouldn't be in pain, you know, and you want to fix that. So it's been hard trying. We've realized that he never really got to develop emotionally as a 2-year-old because he was dealing with so much pain and issues at that time. So now we're kind of dealing with it now when it comes down to tantrums and behavior, and communication has been difficult with him lately.
Yeah. Yeah, because we feel like the older he gets, we're waiting for all of a sudden him to react as a 6-year-old when it comes to tantrums. And he's not yet. He is still responding as Jake is 2. Like 2 when it comes to throwing a tantrum. So all of this we're just learning and probably understanding that kind of development was delayed because of how much he was going through during his real developing stages as a 2-year-old.
It's probably funny for people to be listening to this that really know Jake that are super surprised by that. Because his tantrums and things aren't things he really does in public. It's more of in the home.
No, but I think people that know him well enough would know, like, oh, Jake can be real moody.
Yeah.
And Jake can say nothing to you and not look at you. And then the next time you see him, he's a completely different person.
Super happy, super talkative.
Yeah.
Very friendly.
So
it's kind of a hit or miss with him. He's also learning his restrictions as he gets older. Yeah, physical restrictions that he has. We'd gone to a parkour park for a birthday party, and he couldn't keep up with the kids. He couldn't bring his leg up high enough to climb over something because his hip is probably restricted in the movement. And he immediately shut down and gave up and walked away and was frustrated and mad rather than trying harder. And so we're noticing those differences in him. He's noticing those differences in himself. And we've never slowed him down or stopped him. You know, we're letting him play soccer, and the fear is that he'd get kicked in the leg and have an internal bleed. You know, but we deal with it when it happened. And so far, so good. And then he does get tired a lot quicker. We're realizing that his body is pumping more blood. He has an extra huge vein in his calf, which is why he needs to be wearing a compression stocking, which we can't seem to get fitted correctly. But that extra vein works harder to pump blood through his body, which makes him tired a lot quicker. So we have a wheelchair we take with us when we know we'll be gone for long periods or be doing a lot of walking, like at the zoo or at a park somewhere. So he doesn't have to walk and burn all that energy too quick, so he can last a little longer.
Yeah.
So that's another difference in what we're dealing with. And we've met a lot of people on Facebook and a lot of people online through groups that, you know, have this syndrome that we can relate to. And so that's always helpful. And
that's where we've learned that he is in pain, because he's never been able to express it. And it's been adults who say, yes, you know, I have KT syndrome and I'm always in pain and have always been in pain, yeah. You know, and that's always a real, like, eye-opener for us when they talk about how painful it is for them, because Jake hasn't even learned that yet. So yeah, it's a learning experience, and we're learning, and the doctors are learning at the same pace. We were going to these big conferences, and from a few years ago to the one we just went to, it seems like everything they had thought is completely different at this point. Right. So it's kind of...
When we went 3 years ago, I was asking about sirolimus at the conference because I had read about it online and they didn't know anything about it. They didn't have research on it. And then this last October, when we went to the conference in New York, that was all they spoke of, was sirolimus and this new medication and how it worked and...
how great the responses have been, right, for most cases.
For most cases.
And Jake, yeah, is one of those rare cases where it has worked exceptionally well. You know, so...
The only downside is they don't know long-term side effects of it, which is scary. But he's on a very low dose. But we learned so much from these online groups and from these conferences that we come back to San Diego to our doctors and we share the information. And for the most part, I kind of feel like his doctor the other day was really annoyed with me. But I also know that by coming back with this information, it's gotten us where we are today. And so I'm not going to hesitate to share it. And I'm not going to push to see these new doctors and orthopedic doctors and get that compression stocking on him ASAP. And because I've spoken to doctors that actually study this syndrome for a living that have said that this is what he needs to do. So I'm going to follow their lead before I follow my doctor who doesn't specialize in this syndrome.
Yeah.
So it's all about advocating for your kid, and you have to stand up and do that. You have to be willing to do that for your child. I think that has made me a different mom than I ever thought I would have been. It's given me a voice, and it's made me stubborn as hell. I mean, I was stubborn before, but
yeah,
I don't back down, especially when it comes to your kid and their health and wanting what's best for them. I mean, Jake's been through enough, so.
You've been through enough.
Life.
Yeah, well.
I just got dealt with it earlier and all at the same time.
Yeah. So anything else on Jake at this point?
No. He's really snuggly. And he's a great artist and he loves to color and draw.
Yeah, he is going to be a little artist. He holds his emotion in, and then, like, yeah, hopefully he'll learn to focus it somewhere. Instead of just shutting down and not saying anything. And
yeah, hopefully that's just a phase. But he'll be interesting on our year trip.
Yes. He's not too he sometimes seems excited about it, and then sometimes does not seem excited about it. So we'll see.
Yeah. And the doctors kind of have given us permission to take him out, and we'll follow him from afar, and I'll take his medical file with us, and we'll always make sure we know where a hospital is. And luckily, I can pretty much walk in and say, this is what's wrong, this is the medication he needs, admit us to this floor, boom.
Call this doctor.
Yeah, confirm. And call his doctor. So, I think we'll be just fine, and
yeah.
That's it. That's Jake in 44 minutes.
Yeah. Well, until next time. Peace out.
Peace.